This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jennifer Cunningham. I'm class of 1992, and I work in the Office of Alumni Affairs. This is an hour-long discussion with Dean Rakow from the Plantations. He's going to give just a few minutes of overview of what's going on in the Plantations today, and then you will get about 50 minutes to ask your questions, and you can do that using your phone, or you can use the chat feature, which is at the bottom of the screen right beneath me. So a short introduction about Dean Rakow, Don Rakow. He's been the Elizabeth Newman Wilds Director of the Cornell Plantation since 1996. He's also an associate professor in CALS. He holds a BA in English from SUNY Albany and earned his Master's of Professional Studies and his PhD in Horticulture from Cornell. His research today focuses on the history and management of public gardens and their roles in public culture. He's also one of Cornell Adult University's most popular instructors. He's led many garden study tours in the U.S. and Europe. And this spring, he co-led a CAU tour of gardens and galleries in the Netherlands with Johnson Museum Director Frank Robinson, who many of you know. All right, I'm going to turn it over to you now, Don.
Thank you, Jennifer. And it's certainly very ingratiating to me and to all of us at Cornell Plantations that so many of you are on the participant list and are interested in learning more today about Cornell Plantations. To begin, I thought it would be helpful to speak a little bit about how Cornell Plantations is distinguished from other college and university public gardens around North America. Of course, I feel that we have some distinct advantages. First, the concept for Cornell Plantations was first articulated in 1944 by the extraordinary botanist and horticulturist and first dean of the College of Agriculture, Liberty Hyde Bailey. Bailey envisioned a green horseshoe that would surround the Cornell campus and would consist of a botanical garden, an arboretum, and natural areas, and he referred to this as a series of enterprises based on the land and for the study of wild, economic, and ornamental plants and trees. In fact, Bailey was the one who gave us this name, Cornell Plantations. Second, our extensive horticultural collections and many of our natural areas are located right on or immediately adjacent to the Cornell campus. This provides faculty and students at Cornell with a myriad of opportunities to study plants, conduct research, as well as to access the beautiful green places that we manage. Thirdly, we are really fortunate to have a remarkable network of Cornell alumni and other friends who have long advised, encouraged, and supported Plantation's growth and development. But even the visionary Bailey might not recognize the organization that Plantations has grown into today. When I'm asked, what is Cornell Plantations? I usually explain that we are based on three pillars: horticulture, conservation, and education. Our basic mission is to connect people to plants and to the natural world. Our 25-acre botanical garden, located just to the east of Beebe Lake, consists of 14 specialty gardens that depict both the beauty of plants and their many uses by people. The best known of these horticultural gems is the Robeson Herb Garden, but visitors also delight in the Young Flower Garden, the Mullistein Winter Garden, the Bowers Rhododendron Collection, the Pounder Heritage Vegetable Garden, our Ground Cover Collection, and many other botanical collections. moving on from the Botanical Garden to the F.R. Newman Arboretum, back in the early 1980s, some of you may recall that these were cow pastures located east of the Veterinary College. Today, they are the 150-acre arboretum that bears the name of our benefactor, F.R. Flood Newman, class of 1912. Today, the arboretum is a sweeping expanse of meadows, lawns, ponds, and magnificent tree and shrub collections. This is where we plant and evaluate new cultivars of woody plants for their winter hardiness, their ornamental qualities, and their pest resistance. But the arboretum is probably best known as a favorite place for students and local community members to walk, jog, bike, or simply enjoy nature. Probably the least well-known part of plantations is our Natural Areas program. We are the stewards of more than 4,000 acres that represent virtually every habitat type that can be found in upstate New York. Our holdings include Beebe Lake and the gorges and woodlands on campus, as well as meadows, bogs, fens, old growth forests, lake cliffs, and other gorges in the region. Professors in disciplines such as natural resources, geology, plant ecology, and biology use these areas for research and take their students on field trips to study these habitats and the plants that grow there. And we certainly welcome the public to explore these sites on their own. Our educational programs reach people of all ages and interests in a wide variety of innovative and engaging ways. Each spring, our youth programs coordinator and volunteers go into every third grade classroom in the Ithaca and Trumansburg school districts to teach a hands-on lesson in botany. Then all of these students, over 450, come to plantations on field trips to explore our wildflower garden and become wildflower gardeners themselves. We also offer several courses and a summer internship program for Cornell students, as well as an annual lecture series and a wide range of adult education classes on topics that range from botanical illustration to plant health and, of course, home landscaping. Plantations also offers a unique two-semester master's degree program in public garden leadership to train graduate students who will go on to manage and lead public gardens in the future. Well, that's a quick overview of our living collections and primary programs. I'd like to take a few minutes to share with you a few of our current and future goals and initiatives. Many of you have read about and have closely followed the process that the university is currently engaged in, reimagining Cornell. Several years ago, we conducted our own long-term planning process and have identified through that process six strategic goals. I'd like to highlight several of those goals that directly relate to the university's priorities. The first of Plantation's strategic goals is to provide a high-quality, welcoming, and inspiring visitor experience throughout the year. This not only relates to Cornell's public engagement objectives, but also fundamentally supports the university's land-grant mission. Certainly the most visible and significant way in which we're fulfilling this goal today is by building a visitor center in the heart of the Botanical Garden, the Brian C. Nevin Welcome Center. For the first time in our history, we will have a fully accessible facility in which to welcome orient, and educate the public, and to provide the amenities that will enhance their visitor experience and their engagement at plantations, including exhibits, a gift shop, a small cafe, and yes, even indoor restrooms. We expect the construction will be finished this fall and that the Nevin Welcome Center will open to the public by the 1st of December. Another of Plantation's strategic goals is to be environmentally progressive in our collections and operations. While this directly supports a primary objective of Reimagining Cornell to promote effective stewardship of the built and natural environment. Of course, preserving native plants and habitats is the focus of our entire Natural Areas program, specifically in regard to the gorges on campus. It is essential that we make these areas both attractive and safe for students to explore and enjoy. We've already incorporated a number of sustainable practices in managing our horticultural collections, including integrated pest management, composting, producing our own mulch, and reducing how often lawns and meadows are mowed. We're currently exploring new initiatives, such as replacing old trucks with hybrids or electric vehicles. The Nevin Welcome Center is another significant step forward in our commitment to sustainability. The building has been designed to achieve LEED Gold status, and part of the first floor is bermed actually into Comstock Knoll, where our rhododendrons are housed. That will naturally insulate the building, and the solar penetration on the building will be intercepted by a series of solar panels that will provide much of the winter heating. In addition, we're using regional materials like local bluestone or Lenrock inside the building and in the surrounding landscape, and the hardwood on the facade has been sustainably grown and harvested. Another primary objective of the university strategic plan is to promote the health and well-being of students as a foundation for their academic and life success. Plantations can contribute to this in a number of ways. Certainly, our arboretum, gardens, and natural areas provide students with a multitude of places where they can go to clear their heads and relax, or engage in healthy and restorative activities. We're also working with the Division of Campus Life, the Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education, Cornell Outdoor Education, and student organizations such as Friends of the Gorges to develop programs that will increase student awareness of plantations and that will lead to greater student success and well-being. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to give you this brief overview of plantations, and now I'm really anxious to learn more from you by hearing about your questions and concerns for plantations.
Okay, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. There's a icon on the lower left of your computer screen that looks like a person on a blue shirt. Or you can type a question into the chat feature, which is right below Don's image there. While we are waiting for people to think about their questions, you've mentioned that the Plantations manages over 4,000 acres of natural areas. What does that entail?
Well, Jennifer, the management of natural areas is somewhat different than the ways in which we manage our cultivated gardens and arboretum. The primary objective in managing natural areas is to preserve the biodiversity and to try to preserve the natural habitat as intact as possible. So the major challenges that we have in reaching those goals are feeding by herbivores, most common and destructive of which, of course, is the white-tailed deer, but also includes beaver and muskrats and woodchucks. In addition, dealing with invasive species is an ever ongoing challenge. Invasive plants like garlic mustard, which is a major one, purple loosestrife, and others, but also invasive diseases and insects that challenge our ability to maintain these areas in as pristine a state as possible. Beyond that, we're just looking at trying to keep the various pathways and trails open so that we do periodically remove downed trees or resurface the trails. More recently, we've gotten into the business of trying to reintroduce native species that have become very rare or scarce in the areas where they have been native. So we will collect seeds, propagate those seeds in our greenhouses, and then reintroduce the seedlings back to the areas where they're native.
Okay, we have a question from Celia Rohde. Please unmute your phone and ask your question.
Hi, Don. I had the opportunity in the last year to see some of the beautiful gardens that I hadn't been aware of behind the College of Agriculture and some of the new ones that were added. And so recently when I was looking at the, you know, some of the university maps, I was noticing that there's actually designations, and maybe it was a plantations map, of which gardens are under the umbrella of plantations. And then it seems that maybe there are some gardens that are not. And in particular, I was curious about Miss Min's garden that is very special, you know, right there in front of the plant sciences building. And I was wondering if that falls under the umbrella of plantations and what the long-term plans are for that lovely garden.
Well, it's a great question, Celia, and good to hear from you. It is a bit confusing, but gardens on the central campus are managed either by Cornell Plantations or the Department of Grounds or the Department of Horticulture. And the specific one that you've mentioned, the Miss Lua A. Min's garden in front of Plant Science, is managed by the Department of Horticulture. The two faculty members who are currently in charge of that, Professors Nina Basick and Peter Trowbridge, have made some great enhancements to that garden, and it does serve as a valuable teaching tool for students in ornamental horticulture. Cornell Plantations is responsible for the Class of 60 seeding area, for the Mary Rockwell Azalea Garden, and for the Dean's Garden directly behind Warren Hall. Probably the least well-known and most unusual garden on campus for which Plantations maintains responsibility is the Poisonous Plants Garden directly behind the Vet College. And that's actually a very important teaching garden for the students in veterinary medicine.
We have a question here from Craig Yunker. How does the university master plan affect the plantations?
Cornell Plantations was consulted throughout the master planning process, Craig, and we're actually very encouraged by the approach that the master planning firm took and which has now been endorsed by the Board of Trustees. The master planners identified the central campus as the core zone in which additional buildings could be erected and additional densification could occur. But they then essentially drew a line in the sand and said beyond this point, primarily points to the east, the university really needs to maintain its more green, open, and rural character. So it is to the east of that line where the university envisions future athletic facilities, as well as the maintenance of horticultural and natural areas by Plantations. In fact, Plantations is intrigued by the idea of the creation of, or actually the expansion of, an upper ag campus adjacent to Tower Road and Judd Falls Road, because we feel that those new buildings would have prime views of the botanical garden.
Great. Okay, just a reminder, if you want to ask a question, use the icon in the lower left of your screen and put up your hand, or you can write in the chat feature. We actually have a chat from Pete Cadeau, who says, I took care of Min's Gardens 2 years ago under the direction of Nina Basick as a landscape architecture grad student. So.
And Pete, it's great to hear from you again, and you also were one of our interns at Cornell Plantation, so we hope that this finds you doing well.
I was just going by the plantations the other day with my kids, and I noticed some pretty big piles of dirt in front of the new visitor center. What's going on there?
Well, first of all, Jennifer, it's important that we call that soil, not dirt.
I just killed a couple plants in my garden, so.
As I'm sure anyone who has visited the Botanical Garden in the last year has noted, we have been engaged with a major construction project. I mentioned in my introductory remarks that the most conspicuous component of this construction project is the new Brian C. Nevin Welcome Center. But in addition to that, we are constructing a new entry drive and parking area and bioswale and new plantings. The large piles of soil that you've referred to, Jennifer, will be distributed across the site, and in the short term will be covered with turf. However, our landscape designer, Irene Lextudis, has designed a very exciting series of new gardens that will gradually be developed in that open area, and that will expand our plant collections, and that will expand our ability to instruct others in ornamental horticulture. By the way, we get a lot of questions from visitors about what happened to the peony garden. And we recognize that in the short term, we have deprived our visitors of the beautiful peonies that had been in the botanical garden. But rest assured, we are saving divisions of all of those peonies in our plant propagation facility. And Irene has designed a really spectacular and unusual peony and perennial garden that we'll be developing and installing in the years ahead.
Okay, well, the students just got back a week or so ago, and one of the questions that that we hear as alumni officers is how the plantations affects the students now as part of the academic experience.
One of the first individuals to take me aside and provide some friendly advice when I first took this position was President Emeritus Dale Corson. And Dale said, you know, it's great for plantations to have pretty gardens, and you certainly should continue that. But remember that this is a university, and always be thinking about how plantations can be supporting the academic mission of this university. We've taken that advice very seriously in the years since, and we provide opportunities to enrich and enhance the student experience in many ways. We teach some undergraduate courses. I personally teach a senior level course in public garden management in the spring, and our director of education, Sonia Skelly, co-teaches a course in plants and human well-being. Undergraduate and graduate students can also sign up for our Plantations lecture series that starts this Wednesday evening, and can take a one-credit option of attending the lectures and then attending discussions held in the alternate Wednesday evenings. I had mentioned in my introductory remarks that we are one of only two universities that offer a master's degree program in public garden leadership. But beyond these courses that Plantations manages, there are many, many faculty members who use our vast holdings as outdoor laboratories, either in the horticultural areas, the gardens and arboretum, or in our many natural areas. And there are many faculty members, particularly in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, who will take their students out for afternoon labs while the weather remains good.
We have a question on the phone from Annette Marsh. Unmute your phone. Annette, if you would unmute your phone to ask your question, we're standing by.
Oh, I'm just wondering who designed the bioswales?
Bioswales.
Well, first I should probably explain, Annette, what a bioswale is. It is a sunken area immediately adjacent to the parking area, and it will be very heavily planted with both trees, shrubs, and perennials that can tolerate both periodic drought and periodic flooding. And the idea of the bioswale is that all of the runoff from the parking area, as well as the rest of the hardscape in the botanical garden, will flow over the land down into the bioswale, and the plants present there will bioremediate or clean, filter that runoff before the water travels below ground back to BB Lake. Now to your question. The basic design for the bioswale was completed by our architectural firm, Baird Sampson Newart of Toronto, Ontario, but all of the planting details were done by our horticultural and landscape design staff.
Neat. Okay, Jesse Hoffman, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Just had a question about plant selections at the plantations. And there are lots of gardens, obviously, and some of them are more general in nature, you know, like the woody plants collection or the conifer collection. And then some of the gardens are very specific, like rhododendrons, for example. So I'm just wondering who and how the decisions are made as to which species to focus so intensively on. And, you know, as new gardens are created, how are those decisions made?
Well, it's a great question, Jesse, and I should point out that Jesse is another of our former student interns, and the internship program is another of the ways in which we help add to students' overall education at Cornell. Decisions about new gardens are complex, and I'll use the example of the Mullistein Winter Garden as one of our most recent examples. A number of years ago, a faculty member who was a member of our Collections and Design Committee came back from a sabbatical in England and indicated that he had frequently visited the Winter Garden at the University of Cambridge Botanical Garden and had been really impressed by it and wanted to know why we at Plantations couldn't have a Winter Garden. Well, we thought about the fact that the winter lasts for about half the year in Ithaca, and it would really make sense to have a Winter Garden so that we would have a garden that would look its best during much of the academic year. We then developed a concept for the Winter Garden and met with a number of alumni to see if any of them would be interested in funding that. Fortunately, an alumnus named Whitey Mullistein was interested in funding the Winter Garden, and from that point we were able to further develop the concept and develop the planting plan. So often a new garden develops as a result of someone's good idea, and then we try to match that idea with alumni or friends who are interested in supporting it, and then it goes to our horticulture and landscape design staff to determine exactly which plants will go in it. But as you'll recall, as a former intern, Jesse, none of our gardens are completely static. So even in the winter garden or the young flower garden or Robeson herb garden, the gardeners are always taking out plants that have not performed well and introducing new plants. And that's a prime part of our role as a public garden, to be evaluating plants and to be introducing new ones for people's enhancement and education.
Great. Okay, Marty Lustig, you have your hand raised.
Hi, John. Great to see you on the conference. Question. With the some of the issues the university has had to face with financial problems, what effect has that had on plantations, and to what degree is that going to be a problem longer term?
Marty, great to hear from you, and certainly every unit at Cornell has had to address how they are dealing with the financial belt tightening that has been necessary in response to the recent recession. Plantations has had to do its own belt tightening. We've reduced our staff by about 4 positions. And in the fiscal year that ended June 30th, we had to put all of our full-time staff on a one-day furlough during the winter months. I'm very pleased to say that as a result of the extraordinary support that we've received from alumni and friends, as well as some unexpected bequests, we've been able to do away with those very unpopular furloughs. And in conjunction with our new Nevin Welcome Center, we'll be hiring 2 positions, one which will focus on visitor services and rentals, and the other that will focus on marketing and retail services. So I feel that it's been a tough period. I'm very hopeful that we're coming out of it. And by having 6 strategic goals that we focus on, we're being able to use our resources in the most effective way.
Okay, now one from Edwin Oyer on the chat. And if you can answer this, you could probably be a billionaire because I know that many of us have the same question. How do you keep the deer from eating in the garden other than fencing, especially in the winter garden?
Well, for those who don't know, Ed is our next door neighbor in the botanical garden, so he has a particular interest in how we deal with deer management. Cornell Plantations is participating in the university's comprehensive deer management program. There are a few primary components of that program. One is to encourage legal hunting in Cornell's outlying natural areas. And we're making that encouragement in a number of ways. Our Director of Natural Areas now maintains a database for hunters who are interested in participating in that program. Secondly, Cornell is engaged in an experimental program in which does who are found on and immediately adjacent to campus are tranquilized, transported to the vet college, where students conduct tubal ligations on those does, and the does are then reintroduced to exactly the spot where they were taken. The idea behind that second project is to, over time, reduce the fertility of the local deer herd. Thirdly, certain areas are simply being fenced with 8 to 10 foot high, high tensile wire fences. We have fenced the Mundy Wildflower Garden and have noted a tremendous difference in terms of the reemergence of spring ephemerals that were being suppressed for years and years by deer herbivory. Finally, we do a lot of deer repellent spraying, and our integrated pest management staff differ in terms of the types of repellents that they use so that the deer don't become acculturated to a particular smelly repellent. The combination of all of those approaches allows us to maintain our collections, but it is done at great cost in both labor and materials.
Okay. You talked a little bit about the Cornell's financial situation on the plantations. Another one of the things that we see in the news here at Cornell is about our sustainability initiatives. Mm-hmm. What role does the plantations play in that?
Well, another of our six envisioning goals calls for plantations to be a progressive green garden in all of our programs and operations. So we take this very, very seriously. We have an integrated pest management program in which we are constantly monitoring our plant collections for the existence of pests. And only when a particular pest gets above a certain threshold level do we then look at whatever is the least toxic approach to managing that pest. In addition to our IPM program, we also have a very extensive composting program. In fact, I sometimes joke that a couple of our gardeners treat composting like a religion. They're so serious about it. We also generate our own mulch so that we're using resources really to their fullest. In addition to that, we really innovated the approach of what we call low-mow turf management, in which certain areas, like Newman Meadow, are only mowed on a once or twice basis over the course of the growing season. And we're very pleased to see that the university has now adopted that low-mow approach in a number of central campus areas. We're also very interested in replacing our aged fleet of gas-guzzling trucks with more fuel-efficient and low-emission vehicles to further support that sustainability approach. Going forward, we're going to be looking at innovative approaches like the production and use of biochar or compost tea, and doing those approaches in conjunction with university researchers.
We have a question from Kristen Rupert on the chat. Alumni often say, I never knew the plantations was here when I was a student. Do you have any plans to encourage more undergrads to visit the plantations, not to do horticultural research, but simply to hang out, jog, have picnics, bang that big bell at the top, et cetera?
Well, Kristen, very good to hear from you and an excellent question. And we absolutely want to encourage more student use of plantations, not only in August when it's sunny and 90 degrees, but when it's also getting cold and students can explore plantations with a jacket on. We've actually added a student marketing assistant position, and the sole role of that student when they are working for plantations is to explore ways to make students more aware of plantations, but also make plantations more appealing to students. So it is one of the prime items on our agenda. And we look for students to come up with great ideas like the Scavenger iPhone app, thank you, that a summer student assistant developed this past summer, and which allows any iPhone or other smartphone user to explore the botanical garden through a series of prompts. This is going to be an ongoing process. We're never going to be satisfied with the number of students who are utilizing plantations, but we feel that if we're making progress in this area, then that is encouraging.
Jesse Hoffman has his hand raised again.
Hi. Another question. You mentioned that the idea that as a public garden, Cornell Plantations acts as a testing ground for new plant cultivars. I'm wondering if there is any sort of public database with a list of plants that are on display at plantations, or any way that the public can gain knowledge of the, you know, the testing that has happened at Cornell plantations as far as which cultivars have been more successful or less successful.
Jesse, I'm going to answer that question, but if I can embarrass you for just a moment, our summer internship program, in addition to being a great educational opportunity for students, sometimes achieves a little bit more than that. And two of our summer assistants or summer interns a few summers back were Jesse Hoffman and Debbie Latta. And if I'm not mistaken, Jesse and Debbie met during the summer and subsequently became a couple. So it's those kind of stories that are particularly endearing to us.
Well, also, what a selling point for the plantations.
Thank you, Chris.
And as a matter of fact, we're getting married October 16th.
Oh, congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
We're very, very pleased to hear that.
Could we do it on web conference?
Just send us photos. So to get back to your question, Jesse, how do we decide on which cultivars to grow? Is that really what you were asking?
No, it was more the fact that when you know, is there a way for the public to know?
Sure.
Kind of what is out there? Is there a place where there's a list of plants? And when you go through these trials of figuring out what's successful and what isn't, is that information documented in a place that the public can have access to it?
So if you were to go onto our plantations website, www.cornellplantations.org, and if you went to the collections portion of that, from collections, you can go to the individual collections, and many of them currently actually list all of the plants in that collection. As part of the development of the Nevin Welcome Center, there is going to be a touchscreen kiosk. And from that kiosk, you'll be able to go to a Find a Plant feature, and you'll be able to type in the name of any plant of interest, and a map will come up showing you where that specific plant is located at plantations. In addition, you asked about lists of evaluations that we've done. And as we conduct evaluations of particular plants, and we recently did one of new cultivars of Buddleia or butterfly bush, we'll be publishing those in our new magazine called Verdant Views, and that will be coming out for the first issue later this month, actually in September, and is sent automatically to all plantations members.
Okay. That Verdant Views, that goes to, do people pay dues or is it anyone who is given?
Any individual or family who's made a gift to Cornell Plantations will automatically receive Verdant Views twice a year. And in addition, anyone, member or not, can sign up for our e-newsletter, which comes out four times a year, and sign up is available from our Plantations website.
Great. Martha Strauss has a question. She says, continuing along with Jesse's questions, are explanations of the plantation's management techniques available? For example, management of multiflora rose.
I have a huge multiflora rose on my home property, Martha, and I'm just wondering how I'm going to tackle that. It's a very thorny issue, no pun intended. Both Verdant Views and its predecessor, the Cornell Plantations magazine, have as a regular feature descriptions of our management techniques, both in our horticultural areas and in our natural areas. So we do urge you to look for the first issue of Verdant Views, and I think that you'll see that there will be an extensive article in there on ways of managing gardens with less water, whether you're in a fairly temperate area like the Northeast or in a drier area such as the Southwest.
Yes.
Don, I saw you a couple years ago speak in Rockland in person to about 200 alumni there. Do you travel around the country much to get out and talk with alumni or to go to conferences, things like that?
One of my favorite activities in my position is to travel the country and beyond to speak to alumni, both in groups like the one you were mentioning, Jennifer, and to speak to them one-on-one. We have had a successful model of having me speak to groups of alumni at a number of public gardens, private gardens, and nurseries around North America, and that's something that I really do enjoy. So any of you who are listening in today who are members of local alumni associations, if you're interested in having representation from plantations at a future meeting, please let our development director, Beth Anderson, know that.
Great. I'm sure they'll take you up on that. The other question I had is, when the Nevin Center opens the beginning of December, are there any celebrations planned or any big yellow ribbon cuttings or parties, things like that?
You know, I had suggested to the staff that we do a fireworks display, and apparently that got kiboshed. No, we do plan some very big celebrations in May of next year in association with the height of blooming of all the rhododendrons. We're planning a grand opening, and although there won't be any fireworks, there will be a number of activities, tours of the facility, educational sessions, and some surprises. So do be looking forward next May to a grand opening of the Nevin Welcome Center, but we'll have a soft opening of the building sooner than that, hopefully by this December 1st.
Okay, Tara Rouse has a question. Are there products that you harvest, such as nuts, fruits, and berries, from the gardens? And if so, how are these used or distributed? Along those lines, are the gardens meant to be mostly ornamental and educational, or is there a push for the gardens to be used as productive working landscapes?
Well, it's an interesting question, Tara, and as I've been speaking about during this discussion, Cornell Plantations is really about education and about the beauty of horticulture and natural areas. Unlike the Cornell Orchards, which does sell the fruit that they produce in their experimental orchards, Cornell Plantations invites visitors to visit our holdings really 365 days a year and from dawn to dusk. We did sell in our previous gift shop divisions or propagules of plants that you'll find in the plantations collection. And when the new gift shop opens in conjunction with the opening of the Nevin Welcome Center, we'll again be offering plants from that location. The produce that is found in our Pounder Heritage Garden, the tomatoes and beans and potatoes, etc., we harvest periodically and bring to local food harvests, such as loaves and fishes, so that that can be distributed to those in our community most in need.
Marty Lustig was asking me telling me that you would always be welcome in Kansas City, where he lives. Any plans to be in Middle America this year?
None at the moment. We did have a very successful event at Powell Gardens, immediately outside Kansas City, a number of years ago, and I'd love to go back there sometime in the future and see their development.
Very neat. Okay, does anybody else have any questions for Don? Anything else you want to say to the group?
Well, a couple of additional things that I'd like to share with the group. I mentioned in my introductory remarks that one of the biggest challenges in the management of our natural areas is invasive species. And while it's an enormous challenge to keep those invasive weeds out of our natural areas, we feel that we have a real responsibility to make sure that we're not introducing invasive species in our cultivated areas, that is the botanical garden and arboretum. So our staff have worked over the past couple of years on crafting an invasive species policy, which basically dictates that we may not introduce any plants that are known to be invasive or that are strongly suspected of being invasive into the cultivated collections. Okay. Another final remark I'd like to make, if I may, is that I know that some of you were not completely familiar with Cornell Plantations when you were students here, and we hope that when you do return, either for alumni reunions in June or to enjoy the pleasures of Ithaca and the Finger Lakes region, that you'll make a visit to Cornell Plantations part of that visit. The gardens and arboretum and natural areas truly do change on a month-by-month basis, sometimes even week-by-week. And it's really worth visiting not just once a year, but multiple times a year.
What are the hidden treasures? Is that a program at the plantations?
Well, there are hidden treasures at plantations, which people sometimes stumble upon or sometimes learn about by visiting our website or by speaking to others who have seen them. One of the hidden treasures is the Treeman Woodland Walk, which is an absolutely beautiful garden that's developed along a meandering stream in the lower arboretum. And in fact, across the road from the Treeman Woodland Walk is one of my favorite gardens at plantations, the Zucker Shrub Sampler. And the Shrub Sampler is organized as a series of outdoor rooms, each of which is made up of different types of plants and each of which provides a wonderful sense of privacy.
The woodchuck.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if there are no more questions, I suggest that we wrap it up and let people get back to their days. This has been great, and you will all get a survey in your email box in a couple of hours. I hope you'll take the opportunity to answer that and let us know how it went here. If you have any other questions for Don, we'll also send his email in that his email address in that correspondence. Any final words?
No, I want to thank everyone for participating today. This was obviously a new venture for us at Plantations, but we're very interested in exploring any and all ways of communicating. So thank you.
Super. Thank you, everybody.